Hey everybody, thanks for joining us this week on Code Chat. My name is Jeremy Foster, and you can find me online at Code Foster, and I'm here with Christopher Banaj. Banaj or Benaj?
Banaj.
Banaj.
Well,
there you go.
There's a story there, but probably not for this. I'll answer to either.
Okay. We'll just say Christopher.
That's fine, yeah.
There you go. I'm excited about today's chat because we're going to be talking about patterns and practices, general guidance for coding and stuff. So it's a little bit of a heady topic, but I think if you're like me, you'll enjoy this because it's kind of nice to pull your head out of the code and say, how should I be coding?
Right,
you know?
Right.
So you're with the Patterns and Practices group at
Correct.
Microsoft. Can you
Correct.
Tell us about that?
Absolutely. So the Patterns and Practices team has actually been around for 13 years, I believe.
Yeah.
I checked the date recently. I believe it was 2002. So there's a bit of a long history there, and there's all kinds of things we've been associated with, from Enterprise Library and Prism have been two very popular projects. Those fall more into the camp of reusable components.
Okay.
But we also have a stack of books. Like in my office right now, I have a library of our entire history, and it's just enormous. I had no idea of what was involved. I only joined the team about 4 years ago.
Okay.
But our charter has always been and still is to really assist developers to be successful in their projects. I mean, it's in some sense very simple. We want developers to be successful, especially on Microsoft platform,
yeah.
right? and so our whole charter is just what can we learn about being successful in different scenarios? And to do that, we go out and we talk to customers. We say, hey, what are you trying to do? How are you trying to use Microsoft technologies?
Mm-hmm.
We're really interested in stories where people are using multiple technologies together. Then we take those learnings back to our team room. We also talk to, of course, our product groups, and we're also now part of a team called the Azure Customer Advisory Team. I can talk a little bit about that later. They're dealing a lot with customers as well. We're bringing all that together and say, okay, if customers are trying to do these things, let's try to do them ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have some hands-on engineering work to try to solve the same problems so that we're not just ivory tower
yeah.
making stuff up.
Yeah, theoretical.
And then we embed. I like the metaphor of embedded journalism. We have embedded writers in our team
uh-huh.
who are engineers themselves,
uh-huh.
and they're working along with us as we encounter problems and struggles, and they say, okay, let's record these learnings as we progress towards some sort of solution. And at the end of the day, what we want to provide customers with is some source code that's real, that they can execute, they can deploy, some written documentation that explores the problem space that we're talking about, and also the alternatives. Because one thing I'm very particular about is I like to say there's no such thing as best practices.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, and a friend of mine used the story that he made that claim, and someone said, well, of course there's best practices. What about breathing? And he said, well, underwater? Right. There's a context to all practices, and we like to embed that into what we're doing. So I tell people it's not about giving you answers to these problems, but it's about helping you know the right questions to ask.
Okay.
Because there's always a context to your own problems, and you can't just take what we do and copy it and be successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather taking the learnings and insights that we've gained and using those to help you understand your own context and to be successful in that context.
Yeah, because I feel like when I look at a good pattern, the nice thing about it is that it's tangible. It works the way, I'm thinking of
yeah.
the, what was the photo app that you worked heavily on?
Hilo?
Hilo, yeah.
Yes.
Hilo was really helpful for me when I was coming up to speed mm-hmm. in that space because it's like, this works as it is, and it's good
right.
practice. It's not exactly what I'm trying to do, but I get this and its concept
yep.
in context. And once I have that concept, then I can go kind of try to apply the concepts to my own space.
Right, exactly, exactly. So that's that, from a taking a step back, that's what we try
mm-hmm.
to do. And we also try to do that as much as possible in the public, right?
Yeah.
So one of our, I mean, a core characteristic of Patterns and Practices is that we want everything we do to be, have a continual cycle of feedback with external customers, right? We don't want to be just thou shalt build software this way and
right.
we're Microsoft and therefore, that's not what we want to be. We want very much to be to have friendly, constructive criticism from outside forces. We like actually going out and finding people who are a little critical of what we're doing and get their opinion because we know it's honest. We like engaging with industry experts if we can find them. So like you mentioned Hilo.js, we went out and we found some JavaScript front-end devs who typically don't do Microsoft work for that, and we said, hey, help us understand the space. Right, be honest with us. Right now, we're doing all of our work on GitHub, so all of our content development is on GitHub, and we accept contributions on anything as long as it aligns with the project and the timeline. And we're constantly soliciting feedback from customers. So anybody who wants to share their thoughts, we are interested in hearing those. And we say you could be a seasoned industry veteran, or you could be just a passionate novice, and that's okay because both bring value to us. You know, your experience and wisdom around a certain problem is you know, critical to what we're doing. But also to know what the passionate novice is struggling with is also very insightful too. You know, you mentioned earlier that patterns can be heady, and that's something I'm really aware of. And I don't want it to be some sort of distant academic discussion. I want to make sure that it's accessible at all skill levels, really.
Now, that's interesting. I feel like you anticipated one of my questions, which was going to be something along the lines of what's the difference between like just a best practice and a good practice? Because when you issue something from Microsoft Patterns and Practices, you know, you're saying this is good practice, and now I'm gonna go build my startup maybe around this pattern itself. And so when you put it out there, how much of a declaration is that of this is good practice? And also how permeable or mutable is that? Like, is it now it's on GitHub, so is it gonna evolve? Is it gonna change? Is it gonna?
Yeah, great questions. So there's, as always, it depends, right? For the most part, my answer to people is, we don't want to say that there is a single prescriptive way to solve most problems. Now, there are certain cases where if your conditions, if your context aligns very, very clearly with something that we've established, we can say, in this context, you should never do this. Well, like one of my examples is, I believe very strongly, all I/O should be asynchronous. If you're a .NET dev specifically, you should default to asynchronous calls for I/O. So I put that out as a best practice. There may be some edge cases where that doesn't make sense, So again, context matters. Then you mentioned like we're doing this on GitHub. So is it evolving? Is it changing? And that's a difficult question because right now I really believe that my team at least, but I think it's still true for Microsoft, we're at a little bit of an inflection point. There's been a lot of cultural change in the company. My team specifically, a couple years ago, we were really agile compared to the rest of Microsoft. When products shipped every few years, and we were shipping every 6 months, we were a speedboat, you know, weaving in between these massive beasts of ocean liners. But now, Azure, it's constant. There are constant innovation and constant updates, and technologies are changing. As a result to that, we've been trying to figure out how can we make sure that what we do has a good shelf life, right? So we don't want to produce some guidance that is outdated in, you know, not, I want to say a year, but really it's months or in some cases weeks. A really good example is we had some guidance, I think about 3 years ago now, on transient fault handling, a lot of retrying operations when there were faults that are considered transient. And what we shipped had specific plugins for different Azure services. And it's still a fairly popular project, but the truth is it's been deprecated. Well, I should say the services have all implemented their own retry logic, and what we did guidance-wise there is now outdated. But it's potentially confusing to people, too. And so we're trying to figure out that balance between what can we do that is long-lived, and what do we need to identify clearly as, well, this has a certain lifespan. And we're trying to, actually, when we write our content, keep those two things separated. The conceptual, more pattern-like guidance, separate from the here's how you do it with this technology, with this SDK on this platform. And to be honest, we're still
because even the big things change. You know, like you were mentioning the asynchronous I/O, and I feel like I remember the paradigm shift towards asynchronous almost anything in the industry, where we were saying, you know, if I'm going to the database, it might just be a while, and I might just have to freeze my UI for a little while. That's just the way it is. And then we started seeing the asynchrony come in. It was painful at first. It was unfortunate that we had to do it, and now it's just like easy. You know, in most frameworks and most languages that we use, it's just easy to do, and it's a given that you'll do things that way. And we're in the middle of some pretty big paradigm shifts right now. I mean, we're moving to the cloud. We're seeing IoT. I mean, I feel like we're standing on the shore, and there's a tidal wave of change next to us.
that's really true.
It's got to be pretty hard in your group.
it is, and we're trying to learn faster than everyone else is so that we can help them out along the way. And you're correct. And one of the things I like to talk about, actually, is the fact that, you know, this wave of change is we're seeing certain standard default patterns at high architectural levels changing. So what do I mean by that? I like to tell people, you know, for the last 15 years, our default approach, at least in the .NET world that I've been a part of, is the N-tier architecture, the three-tier
the classic
architecture, right, exactly. And it's really, I like to always point out too, it all goes back to separation of concerns, right? It's really about, I want my data layer separate from my logic layer, business logic, separate from my presentation layer.
And the IT guy likes it too, because they're on different servers. And
exactly. Different servers, but probably in the same server room, maybe even the same rack, which actually brings us to the point, right? When we're going to the cloud, we've seen lots of times where customers will build something like that, bring it over to the cloud, and it falls over. It especially when there's some sort of unbounded scale involved, right? So we're seeing part of this tidal wave of change is that we're seeing people, developers, you know, shops that used to build maybe a system that where they had a certain amount of traffic they expected on it because maybe it was a line of business application, and now they're building consumer-facing systems that have some sort of unbounded amount, or maybe they're doing IoT and there's a lot more traffic than they've ever dealt with there. And those systems, those architectural patterns kind of fall over in the cloud. So we are beginning to explore, like, what does it mean to build cloud native systems? What are the basic fundamental architectures there? Because they seem to be different. And one of the ones that I've been interested in a lot lately is ones where event stream processing is at the heart of it. So in Azure, we launched Event Hubs several months ago now. I forget the exact date, which is sort of Microsoft's technology for event streams. So we've been exploring that a lot as sort of a fundamental architectural pattern for building all kinds of systems. And interestingly enough, you also mentioned IoT in there. I've personally been involved with exploring the IoT space for the last couple of months now. And what I've really found is it's really a lot about event stream processing. I should qualify too, because when I say IoT, everyone thinks, well, where's my Raspberry Pi or my Arduino or maybe my Nest on the wall? My team has not dealt with any of the device side development.
Hopefully that doesn't matter. Whatever kind of device it is, it's just a message.
Exactly. There's something transmitting data to a back end. So I'm starting with what happens to that back end. And there's all kinds of interesting problems in that space, right? There are problems of, well, what if the things that are transmitting data speak different languages? So there's different protocols coming in. How do I handle translation of protocol? Maybe there's different encoding formats. How do I translate that data? There are issues just of scale. If I have, you know, hundreds of thousands of devices sending data to a back end at high velocity, how do I ingest all that data and have it not overwhelm services downstream? That's really where the whole event stream processing comes in as well. So my team's been exploring those questions. And actually, that's a project that we have on GitHub right now. IoT Journey is the name of that one. We're going to be slowing down for the month of August and September and probably ramping back up again on that later in the fall.
So that's here on GitHub. You're talking about IoT Journey?
Exactly, exactly.
And this is half of you right here?
That's our team right now, I think, for the most part.
But this one right here specifically.
Exactly.
That's half of Christopher.
Precisely. Forgot that I hadn't updated that yet. And we encourage people to come to GitHub, and we have several projects live there right now. Many of them have Gitter chat rooms set up, if you're familiar with Gitter.
Yeah, sure, it's great.
And we want to hear from people. We want them to take a look at what we're doing. We want to solicit friendly, always qualify that, friendly constructive criticism, though.
Yeah.
People should feel free to say, this isn't right, or I don't like this.
For the developers that are just out there doing their day job, you know, they're working heads down on their code, I totally respect and relate with what they're doing. And it's really cool when you're in that position to be a part of something big. Like, I just had an interview with a guy from NPM.
Yeah.
And I had an issue, brought it up on GitHub, and somebody from the team was like, well, tell me how you would expect it to work, and go ahead and issue a pull request. And now here I am, just average Joe developer,
right,
and I'm working on NPM with the guys that build it, you know? And the fact that somebody can be involved in the process here at Patterns and Practices on Microsoft is really exciting, actually.
I agree. I'm a huge fan of community collaboration.
Yeah.
In fact, the reason I came to this job was, for me, it was the confluence of community with software engineering with
mm-hmm.
teaching.
Yeah.
Those three things coming together for me, I'm like, that's ideal.
Yeah.
That's the job I want. And I also love the transparency and honesty mm-hmm. of it, because right now, pretty much everything I do is in the public.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
We're also, I'm having conversations too with teams like the .NET Core CLR team,
mm-hmm.
ASP.NET, vNext work, because they're doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to learn from each other. And they're actually further along, you know, than I am, and I'm gaining a lot of insight from those guys and how they're dealing with community, how they're involving people, and it's thrilling to see some of those changes take place.
Okay, so if I am that average developer and I want to gain some expertise in figuring out in learning the concepts of good patterns, good practices,
mm-hmm.
is looking at patterns and practices like what is issued from our PNP group, is that kind of the best way to learn, or are there other ways, the books or courses, or what's the best way for people to learn?
Well, so that's a great question, and it depends on some extent on where they're currently at in their own personal development. Probably the best thing to do, well, let me qualify that first. Right now, my focus is on Azure and the cloud.
Okay.
And I don't think I mentioned it earlier here, but we are now part of Azure.
Patterns and Practices has moved into Azure?
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's been true for about a year.
Okay.
We haven't talked about it a lot, but that's mostly because we've been trying to figure out what it means. We've been doing a lot of reevaluation and reflection on what does it mean to be part of Azure. So there's been some announcements recently, right? We handed over Prism to some community owners.
Mm-hmm.
We recently handed over Unity as well to some community owners as well. And part of the reason, the motivation for that, is that as we're focusing our energies on Azure, we want to make sure that we're investing our resources in the places where it will bring the most value to the community at large. And we really felt that those projects were better off in the hands of the owners that have
So not diminishing the value of the of those entities themselves, but just saying that maybe the better way for these to move forward is for them to move forward community-led.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and for me to be very honest, we weren't investing in them as much as these new owners will.
Will, yeah. I already have.
Exactly. So, the two Bryans, they're on fire.
They're rocking it.
I trailed away from your question, which was, what's the best way for developers to really learn from what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was trying to steer that. So, in the context of Azure is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
employees at Microsoft feel overwhelmed by that. You know, developers in the Azure team feel, wow, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
So that's a difficult question. And again, it really depends on where they're at. We have one body of content that I would actually encourage most people to check out. On GitHub, we have a repo called Azure Guidance.
Okay.
That is really a set of articles that are meant to cover a broad set of concepts when building systems on Azure.
Okay.
This is actually mostly on Azure.com as well.
Okay.
So if you go to azure.microsoft.com on the documentation menu, there's currently a best practices link that has some of these articles. We're actually working with the team that owns that site too to figure out a better landing page so that you can go there and say, well, I want to learn about these high-level concepts. And our intent, and I'll again, confess we're not quite there yet, is we really want it to be a place where someone can go and say, here's the big things I want to learn about.
Yeah.
And then as they learn them, there will be cross-links to the other, you know, the specific Azure services that support those patterns and those ideas and those architectural concepts. So part of that is maybe our long-term vision. But for someone who's maybe fresh to the space, I would say that this is probably a good place to start.
Well, and it might depend on your learning style. I mean, I could go to Azure.com and look at all the different features in Azure and go look up one like DocumentDB and say, I need to learn DocumentDB. Here's the documentation.
Right.
Here's a getting started guide. Here's the, you know, enumeration of the methods and what they do and what properties they're expecting. A real detailed, but then I'm really targeted. I haven't asked myself the question, should I use DocumentDB
exactly.
or should I use SQL Database? And so I like this as an approach if I'm just the developer coming to it. This as an approach, because then the concepts are relayed, and then you're able to say, here's where you use a relational database.
Exactly.
Here's where you use NoSQL.
Exactly. And you're actually hitting the nail on the head. You want to come work for us? because that's the sort of questions we want to help with. In fact, if we find ourselves saying, this is how you use DocumentDB, we put on the brakes and say, you know what,
that's a code smell for you.
Exactly, it is. Exactly. We want to answer those broader questions. And in fact, it's been probably 2 or 2.5 years ago now, we actually put out a book that was on when do I use NoSQL? It was before DocumentDB came out, so we talked about Mongo in that case.
Yeah.
But when do I use a relational store? When do I use a graph database? Because that's the sort of topics we want to convey. And also, in fact, on our IoT project, we are looking again at event stream processing. Well, Microsoft has a number of solutions available to you that you can use to process events, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we offer Stream Analytics, which is a very easy to get started experience with SQL-like syntax. But we also have HD Insight, and on HD Insight, you can run a storm topology, which is a little bit intimidating unless you know Java. And I imagine we probably have a large .NET audience watching this, and they may be a little bit intimidated by that, but it's accessible. And we actually wrote some content in our IoT Journey project around, hey, if you want to run a storm topology, let's not assume that you know Java. Here's how you can go and do it. But you can also just spin up an event processor completely on your own. We wrote a couple in .NET to show how you would do that. So there's three different, radically different really solutions to the same problem that all have benefits. The benefits may be power, customization, ease of use, those are all the different trade-offs depending on which solution. We try to actually be very honest about why would you choose one of these over the other.
Yeah. Well, Christopher, this is really cool. I actually get really excited about patterns and practices. You know, as you've probably gathered from the way I ask the questions, this is kind of the way my brain thinks, so that's really helpful. Is there anything else you want to share with developers before we go?
Only that we want everybody involved. We're very interested in knowing what are the problems that you're struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
We're very interested in knowing, are we answering questions that matter to you? We want developers to keep us honest as much as possible, and we love hearing from them.
That's cool. That's great. That's a great place to be. Okay, well, thank you very much, Christopher, for the nice chat. And thank you, audience, for joining us this time on Code Chat. And we will see you next time.